This is Fresh Air. The two major influences in Lewis Puller's early life were his father and the Vietnam War. Puller's memoir, Fortunate Son, is about his relationship with his father and his experiences fighting in Vietnam. He received a Pulitzer Prize last year for his book, which is now out in paperback. Puller's father was a much-decorated military hero. He got the name Chesty because he marched with his chest thrust out. He spent 30 years in the Marine Corps and retired in 1956 when Lewis Puller was still a boy. Lewis Puller joined the Marine Corps in 1967 and went off to fight in Vietnam. He was nearly blown to bits when he stepped on a landmine. He lost both his legs and parts of his hands. He returned to the States a bitter and angry man, unable to imagine living in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. Puller works as a lawyer now for the Pentagon. When we spoke, he told me what it was like to have a father who was a hero.
He would walk into a crowded room, and the room would divide, and people would get quiet. We would go to Richmond, Virginia when I was a little boy, and strangers would come across the street to shake his hand. And we'd go into restaurants and order meals and would not be allowed to pay for them. He was always, as long as I can remember, the center of attention.
Did you feel that you approached your father with some degree of deference then, knowing his stature in the community and actually around the nation?
I had two fathers. I had my father, and I write about this in the book. I had this father who was a legend, and he was all powerful and didn't make mistakes and was fearless and was a water walker and the father with the medals and the great warrior. And then I had the father who was the caregiver and the nurturer and who shared my small triumphs and defeats and took care of me. And when I was smaller, I had a harder time separating those out, but I see clearly now that they were really two separate people and that the lesser-known one, the caregiver, was the one that I really loved.
Did you feel then you had to share him with other people?
Oh, yes. Yeah, very definitely. When he went off to war during the Korean War, he never had enough time for us. His schedule was always busy while he was on active duty anyway. Later, after we got out of the Marine Corps, he had more time for us. And I got to know him better in that period between, say, 1956 when he retired from the Marine Corps and in his old age.
You joined the Marine Corps in 1967. Being the son of Chesty Puller, did that pull any weight in the Marine Corps? Did that give you any special status whatsoever?
It made me a very singular lieutenant and a candidate before that. Certainly, everybody was watching every step that I took and every move that I make, and I was it was like living in a goldfish bowl stateside.
Mm-hmm.
After I got to Vietnam, it didn't make any difference. Once I got my platoon, all they cared about was having a competent lieutenant who wasn't going to get any of them killed.
I think one of one of your commanders, I guess this was in basic training, called you an irritant, that somehow your presence there would be considered an irritant. For whom, I wonder?
Probably for him. I don't know whether it generated any more paperwork for him or what have you, and he may have just been trying to hassle me. He was probably rather proud to have Chesty Puller's son in his platoon, but they never missed a chance to play mind games with you.
Describe what you saw as your plane landed in Vietnam, or even what you, as the door was opened, what even hit you then?
The incredible shimmering heat. It was like a slap in the face to come down onto the tarmac and feel that, I don't know what it was, 110 degrees, whatever. And it was humid, and I didn't think I'd ever get used to it. It was just absolutely oppressive.
As you came there, a green soldier, were you scared? Were you scared? Did you feel that you could handle this? Did you know what you were getting yourself into?
I was looking forward to it in a way. I wanted to be tested. You know, I wanted to prove myself my father's son. But sure, I was scared. You know, I was getting ready to take over a platoon of young Marines who had been tested long before I got there, and many of them, it seemed to me from my particular vantage point then, far more capable than I was. As it turned out, that wasn't the case. I had the training that they didn't have, and I think I worked my way into leadership of the platoon pretty quickly without any ill effects.
What kind of a leader would you say you were, leader of your platoon?
I wasn't a hard-charging, you know, put the bayonet in the mouth and follow me kind of guy. I tried to be fair. I tried to be low-key. I tried to listen a lot at first. And eventually I got to the point where my main goal was to keep as many of them alive as I could.
Is that the ultimate goal of any leader then?
Probably not. I think the ultimate goal in that particular war was to kill the enemy. Body count was a big word. But after a while I didn't care about killing the enemy. Certainly you need some payback from time to time because of what they're doing to you. But my main concern was that my troops were being maimed and killed.
As the war went on, did you, and time went on, did you begin to feel more or less lucky? Because I would think there's a lot of kind of almost like superstitious behavior that you go through.
Yeah, what happens normally in Vietnam is that, or what happened in Vietnam was that a great many more troops would get wounded in their first month and in their last month. They'd get wounded in their first month because they didn't know what they were doing, and they'd get wounded in their last month because they'd gotten too cautious. Superstition, I don't know. I began to see after a while so many of us were getting wounded that I thought that inevitably it was going to happen to me. I didn't have any idea that what the dimensions would be or the severity or the degree, but I thought I would get wounded.
My guest is Lewis Puller, author of Fortunate Son. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air.
I'm speaking today with Lewis Puller, Jr., and his book is called Fortunate Son, The Healing of a Vietnam Vet. And he served in Vietnam, was wounded there, and actually came back to Philadelphia, to the Philadelphia Naval Base, to recuperate, and now lives and works in Washington, D.C. I'd like to have you read this section.
Sure.
Right there.
A narrow trail led up the hill to the headquarters group, and as I approached, it never occurred to me that the 30 meters between my course and the commander's position had not been secured. I knew only that the firepower advantage of the NVA squad I had just encountered would be neutralized if I could reach the men milling at the crest of the hill. With only a few meters left to cover in my flight, a thunderous boom suddenly rent the air, and I was propelled upward with the acrid smell of cordite in my nostrils. When I landed a few feet up the trail from the booby-trapped howitzer round that I had detonated, I felt as if I had been airborne forever. Colors and sounds became muted, and although there was now a beehive of activity around me, all movement seemed to me to be in slow motion. I thought initially that the loss of my glasses in the explosion accounted for my blurred vision, and I had no idea that the pink mist that engulfed me had been caused by the vaporization of most of my right and left legs. As shock began to numb my body, I could see through a haze of pain that my right thumb and little finger were missing, as was most of my left hand, and I could smell the charred flesh, which extended from my right wrist upward to the elbow. I knew that I had finished serving my time in the hell of Vietnam. As I drifted in and out of consciousness, I felt elated at the prospect of relinquishing my command and going home to my wife and unborn child. I did not understand why Watson, who was the first man to reach me, kept screaming, "Pray, Lieutenant, for God's sake, pray." I could not see the jagged shards of flesh and bone that had only moments before been my legs, and I did not realize until much later that I had been forever set apart from the rest of humanity.
What happened to you?
I thought my war was over, and it was just beginning. I thought that in giving up my legs and certainly it wasn't a voluntary act, but I thought that my time in Vietnam and in the theater of war was over, and that I no longer would have the awesome responsibility of being responsible for 28 or 29 young Americans on a daily basis. For that reason, I was elated, mm-hmm. actually. But I did not see that it was going to take an enormous struggle just to try to come to terms with what had happened to me physically and psychologically and spiritually.
When did it become clear to you the extent of your injuries?
I certainly didn't know when I plummeted into the sand that day what had happened to me. You know, I could see that I was missing a part of a thumb and part of a finger on my right hand. I didn't know that my legs were gone. I don't know when that occurred. I think that if it had occurred at that moment, that life probably would have been taken from me. A lot of troops in Vietnam, when they saw potentially life-threatening injuries, just gave up and died. So maybe for some reason when my shoulder was dislocated and I couldn't turn my head to see my legs, maybe there was a divine providence that willed that it would be that way.
Was there pain even at that instant?
I went into shock pretty quickly. And shock is a wonderful way of taking care of pain.
You spent some time here in Philadelphia at the Philadelphia Naval Hospital.
Yeah, Marty, I spent 2 years in the Philadelphia Naval Hospital.
I wondered how accessible the world was back in the late 60s and how easy or difficult it was to just get from here to there if you're going to be in a wheelchair.
It was terribly difficult. It's not easy now, but back then it was frustrating as hell to get out and you know, I went from being a lieutenant in the Marine Corps, young and dumb, and we've got an expression for it that I can't repeat over the air, but I virtually had the power of lightning and thunder at my fingertips. I could call in artillery missions. I could make lightning and thunder. I could rain death and destruction on people. I could give orders, and people would obey them almost instantly. And I went from that, just in the space of a few seconds, to being totally helpless, to having to ask for a drink of water, or if my nose itched, I had to ask somebody else to scratch it. I couldn't feed myself. I couldn't turn over in bed. I couldn't be responsible for any of the daily functions that I had taken for granted for the first 23 years of my life. It was a harrowing, degrading experience.
How was your family able to handle it?
My wife, God bless her, was the stiff upper lip. You know, she stuck her jaw out and stayed with me right from the beginning, and has never faltered. You know, her love and her loyalty's always been there, even at times when I have been unworthy of it. And it's gotten me through some awfully, awfully rough and rocky spots.
And for your father?
Difficult. I only saw him cry twice in my life. You know, once, and I write about this in the book, and once before I went to Vietnam and once when I got back. And the first time I saw him cry, I didn't understand what was happening. You know, I'd lived with him for 22 years, and I'd never seen a tear come out of his eye, and here I was in the backyard of my family home beneath a willow tree, and my father is trying to tell me to come back on my shield or with honor, which was an expression that I guess Spartan mothers told their sons back in the Peloponnesian Wars or whatever, and he was very proud of it. He couldn't say it, and he choked on the words, and then he broke, and then I got back from the war, of course, and when he saw me, he was an absolute mess. One of the, and again, I stress that this is a happy book, but one of the sad things about the book is that he and I were never able to sit down and reconcile what had happened to me and how my injuries had affected him, and there was none of the natural playing out that should have taken place, that should have contributed to the healing. He had a series of strokes right after I got back, and each one left him with a progressive inability to communicate until finally there was virtually nothing left.
Could he hear?
I don't think so. Oh. And at the end, he was also blind. And there was really no communication. While that is just inordinately sad to see a man who was so strong become so weak, it's part of life. You know, it's eventually what happens to all of us. And I think the description of that in the book, of his decline and his illness and his ultimately his death, and while it was the hardest part of the book to write for me, is the most beautiful part of the book.
Well, I thank you very much.
Thank you, Marty.
Lewis Puller's memoir, Fortunate Son, received a Pulitzer Prize last year. It's now out in paperback. This is Fresh Air.